Hey guys, my name is Anthony Bandiero. I'm joined by two incredible search and seizure instructors from Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training, bringing the Search and Seizure Show. You're probably watching this on YouTube or listening on Spotify and all the other podcasts. So let's introduce ourselves real quick. Again, I'm a senior legal instructor for Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training. We just got done doing a webinar on traffic stops and canines. And now what we do is after our webinars, we roll into the Search and Seizure Show. Some ground rules here. We answer your questions live. We have an audience right now where if they want to answer, ask a question, they can just turn on their mic and we'll listen. It's almost like a radio show. And Zach and John are going to answer the questions for the most part. And we're going to do our best job. We also have a bunch of questions that I have on my iPad here from people that couldn't attend today and so forth. John, you're the most senior instructor at Blue to Gold Enterprises. Introduce yourself.
My name is John Ween, attorney and senior legal instructor with Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training. I've been doing this a little over 2 years now, and I have the honor and the privilege of traveling across the country and training law enforcement officers on search and seizure law. Prior to this, I did 10 years in Arizona law enforcement. I worked for a suburb of Phoenix. We had about 200 officers, about 200,000 citizens at the time I left. I have been a bar certified attorney since 2011. So the whole time I was a cop, also an attorney.
Yeah, you know, and you went to Pepperdine. You're a little bougie to me. I don't even know why I even like it. That's why I just connect more with Zach, because he's more of a man of the people. You know, he's not no Malibu, you know. Anyway, hey, Malibu rum, maybe. Okay, Zach, who are you?
I'm Zach Miller, legal instructor with Blue to Gold. I was a law enforcement officer for 19 years, and I've been doing legal instruction in some capacity or another for about 15 years. I've been doing this full time for about 2 years.
Yep. And you're in law school right now, and you'll be wrapping it up, you know, in the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
All right. So look, let's answer some questions. So who has a question? Emmanuel, you want to just kind of start this off? Look, guys, I know you have questions, and Kyle, let's do Emmanuel first, and then Kyle, then Andrew. So Rick, can you record this? We have Emmanuel, Kyle, Andrew, and Julian. Okay. Let's do Emmanuel and, Emmanuel, one question. I know you have a lot of them, and then we'll, see if we have time for the other ones, if you have more. All right, Emmanuel, you're on deck.
Ellis, good evening.
Hey, buddy.
All right, let me just kick it off. Yeah, I only have one today. I couldn't think of anything else, but it's not related to the webinar. All right. You get a civil commitment, either officer initiated or court ordered civil commitment, EP, we call them here in Maryland. Boom, you grab the guy, girl, you know, you put him in custody, you take him to the hospital. You drop them off the hospital, you transfer the custody to the hospital, they take the paperwork, all right, good to go. 2 hours later, hospital calls. Hey, the person you brought in for the civil commitment, they ran out the hospital. Can you come get them? Can you go out and get them?
Mm-hmm.
That's happened here before. The hospital called us like, hey, the person you brought in for an EP, they ran out. Yep. Like, can you go get them and bring them back? Question is like, are we okay going back and searching this person and bring them back to the hospital? Or are we violating that person's Fourth Amendment rights because they don't want to be at the hospital? They're like, fuck this. I want to be free, you know?
Yeah. In Las Vegas, we would arrest them for jaywalking. But let me hear what John has to say. John, what do you think?
So this is tough, right? Because we went and we got a judicial order that says you will take this person and take them to this facility, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about. So we went through the established process, whatever it was. We took them to the facility, we dropped them off. And so ultimately the question is how far, I mean, how much longer does that authority extend, right? I mean, we did it, we fulfilled it. That's not going to be in any kind of a system anymore. If an officer stops them once they're released, it shouldn't still be showing that there's a valid commitment order, right?
But they do the Emmanuel in Maryland. Do you have to get these judicial orders like agreed by the judge, or is this all warrantless done by the officer and you just drop them off the hospital and they evaluate it?
Either, on scene, we're there, get a call for an EP, and we have reason to believe that, okay, yeah, this person needs to be committed, or we do receive them from the court and they're court ordered. So either or, it could be like deputy initiated or
right. It can be warrantless or with that order. Okay. Okay. So John, you see a little bit of an issue because you don't have that order.
Right. And I think that we need to be careful of these things, right? Because like what you're talking about, Emmanuel, is in Arizona, we went to this thing where you could just go on and you could fill it out and say, yeah, they're acting, they're talking crazy. It doesn't have to go through judicial process. And then the person who ultimately signs off on it and authorizes it, they worked at a mental health facility. They weren't necessarily a nurse. They weren't necessarily a doctor. And so I see a whole lot of abuse for that. And ultimately, if something does go wrong with you going out and getting this person again, the liability is going to be on you. So if you guys are going through the process where you're saying, hey, like I can do it myself and I can go out and I can fill out the paperwork and I can get it authorized, If that's the realm in which you're operating and you guys have done that, well, then you have a basis for doing it. So do it again.
Hmm. What do you think, Zach? Rookie move over here. Zach.
Yeah, sorry. It's it's an arrest. I mean, definitely for Fourth Amendment purposes. And I mean, I can speak to Virginia. It sounds like we're about the same as Maryland. You can do the warrantless. The officer has to have reasonable cause to believe, you need those services, or it can be issued. Ours are issued by magistrates or judges. So I think it's effectively like an arrest. And if he's, as long as that order is still in valid. Place, mm-hmm. Valid. Yeah. I think we can go seize him and bring him back.
Yeah. Look,
involuntary.
Involuntary. Look, I agree. I definitely agree with John that these are abused. You know, they're abused. I've seen so many abuses. In fact, I talk about it. It's some disgusting abuses of this. And some cops just like falling for it, like real, like just pure accusations about from a boyfriend against his girlfriend. The girlfriend's totally fine. She's like, yeah, I said some stupid stuff earlier today, but I'm fine. You're still going to be civilly committed. I don't like that shit. But at the end of the day, though, I mean, you the way I look at this is that you have in Maryland, we're not Maryland attorneys, okay? But you do have this mechanism for a warrantless civil commitment, and you also have a court order. And you have this person running out of the hospital clearly the doctor is telling you that I have not cleared them yet. So you have probable cause that they are still a danger to themselves or others, at least, right? Because it was already this initial seizure was lawful. And so to me, when you recapture that person, even if it's not under the guise of the court order, to me, it's that statute that allows a civil commitment without a warrant, because you have facts or circumstances that lead you to believe that they are still a danger to themselves or others, right? And so they haven't been cleared. You know, the doctor's like, yeah, she's fine, but can you bring her back here if she forgot her purse? I mean, I just, that's the way I look at it. Right? I mean, isn't that the way to look at this? Like, at the end of the day, the government still has the authority to seize this person until they've been cleared because of this. Right?
Yeah.
What am I missing here? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So look, I see somebody talking about how it happens all the time and the security doesn't want to put hands on these people and they want you to do all the dirty work. And then we're going to be back in 10 minutes because they still will run out the damn hospital and security will not do anything. I guess that's a different issue, right? I mean, maybe that's a conversation you got to have. Like, what are you doing to keep these people inside the four walls of the hospital? But as far as the authority goes, I don't see if the statute is written the way I think it's written, I don't know how we have an issue. Emmanuel?
Yeah, I mean, like, my thought process is of course, I have to agree with you, gentlemen. It is very abused. We see it all the time here. Even, like, some question, some EPs we get that are court-ordered, and I read, like, the reason of belief, and I'm like, are you serious?
I know. But a judge signs
are you, on it. And a judge signs on it. I was just like concerned, like, because that I'm more thinking about the liability of it. Like, all right, the hospital clearly didn't have custody of this guy, and was not taking accountability of this person. They were able to run out the hospital, and God knows where they're at now. Mm-hmm. And then let's say we go hands-on, we get into on you know, use of force, and then now the optics are on us, like, well, wait a minute, like, yeah, you know, they're gonna blame us no matter what. It doesn't matter if the hospital, like,
yeah, but I mean,
like, free, you know,
but are the optics really that bad? I mean, at the end of the day, if you see another issue, if you're like, if you're reading this thing, you're like, I don't think this, I think this is all BS. I think this is all Trump, you know, made up. Then maybe you can pass it on to the shoulders of your three striper, you know, make the sergeant of the LT make the decision. But if you think you, I mean, let's look at a legitimate case. You got a person who has a mental illness, who has been signed off, who's a danger to themselves or others. It meets the statutory definition of mental crisis, right, in Maryland. And all they have to do is escape the arms of the doctor in the hospital, and they're free to go. And now they don't get the treatment that the law allows. The system might be broken overall, but I just don't know how that is the loophole in this, right? They can just escape the hospital and they don't get their 48-hour hold or whatever it is in Maryland. I'm sorry, that doesn't make any sense to me. Otherwise, what, every time they escape, you got to get another court order? I think when the doctor called you and said this person left without a consent or without authority, they're telling you we are not done evaluating them. That's how I look at it, which means that you have a cause that they are the danger to themselves or others.
I agree.
Yeah, and it's not our expertise, but Fourth Amendment, it is an arrest. You know, it's an arrest in a sense that their freedom is taken away by the state, and it's a probable cause level of danger to themselves or others. And if we have that, then to me, it's a good detention to bring them back.
All right. Sounds good, man. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Next on deck is Amanda. No, is it Amanda? We have Kyle next. Kyle Walker. All right, Kyle, you should see a thing for your microphone. And just for the people, why Kyle's getting on here, just so you know, we do not have any access to videos. We cannot, under any circumstances, turn on your video, only microphone. So this is just a talk show. Kyle,
hey,
are you there?
Hey, John.
Hey, buddy.
I'm here in Florida, and I just had a question we've been running into a lot. Like, we have no city ordinance involving open containers and vehicles and stuff like that. So if you pull over a vehicle, it's got open containers in it, but you don't have suspicion of DUI to go along with that. Are you allowed to, one, go in there and retrieve that specific container? Because is that considered a search? And two, can you go search the vehicle for more open containers if it's just a moving violation in your state?
Or now, first of all, I don't know why you're being such a buzzkill in Florida, one of the greatest states in the union, and taking these people's beer away. But it is still, nevertheless, a good question. Zach, why don't you take the lead on this?
So it's you don't have an ordinance, but it's still a violation of state law. Is that right?
It's just a non-moving violation. Like, it's just a
citation. Ticket. You get a ticket for
it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's evidence of the offense. I mean, I don't see why you can't seize it. As far as the next question usually is, well, can I search for more open containers?
Correct. They ain't done with the Michelob Ultra. They want to, get some pay dirt, you know, and maybe find a gun or some drugs.
And I don't think you can do that, because what more evidence is there to collect of that offense? I mean, you already have all of the evidence. I mean, unless you had a reason to believe there was more in there, I guess. I mean, then we could talk about a Carroll search, but you can take the one you can see.
What do you think, John?
So what we're talking about is a non-moving civil violation for having an open container inside your car. Florida's wild and crazy, right? They're like, yeah, they probably got the drive-through booze shops down there.
Yeah, right. What's the state? Is it Louisiana or it's Tennessee that has the, you can get like drive-through daiquiris? Is that what state is that? Tennessee? I think it's Tennessee.
I'm surprised if it's not Louisiana.
Yeah, and actually it is, I think it is Tennessee, because the other thing is that in Tennessee, see, Kyle, you got us all, you know, excited about drinking and driving. In Tennessee, it's not illegal for passengers to have open containers. Do you know that?
Yeah, I know some states are like that.
Yeah, and I think they're saying Louisiana too. And I got to tell you, if my wife heard that, we'd be moving tomorrow to Tennessee. You know what I mean? Because She loves to get her pregame on, you know, and I do too. Saves me a couple $100 in drinks. So look, I got to tell you, Zach, John, I've never seen a case from any court that says that you cannot recover evidence of a civil violation. Have you?
Mm-mm. I haven't.
I have seen the opposite. I've seen the state of Maryland when marijuana was a civil fine only. And there was an appellate court that said that it doesn't matter that it's a civil only. Under the Fourth Amendment, it's still prohibited to possess, right? It's still a prohibition. Just because the state made it a fine only did not mean you can possess it, right? The marijuana, now marijuana is legal in Maryland, as you know. But the court said that we could still seize the evidence. So to me, as far as the Fourth Amendment, I mean, you know, I don't see the Fourth Amendment. I don't think we're restricted because it's probable cause is probable cause. You know, it's a violation of some sort. And just because the state chooses to hit them with fines instead of jail, I don't think, right? I mean, look, then we have Atwater, and I mean, maybe it's not totally similar, but the Siebel violation was kind of civil or fine only type deal, right? You never get any jail time.
Yeah, but you can get arrested.
Yeah. You know,
right.
No, you better not contempt of cop a cop in Texas. You're going to get arrested for a SEPA violation. So I don't know. Look, I think it's petty. You know, we had a conversation last week, I think, when an officer asked us if, you know, if there was authority to search a car, if there was a 19-year-old with cigarettes, right? It is a violation of federal law to possess cigarettes, I guess, right? Possession of cigarettes is a crime. Not, purchasing is a crime or prohibited, but possession is a crime, I guess, of cigarettes, right? Is that true? I guess.
It is in Virginia. You're under 21.
Yeah, so possession is an issue, civil, and people asking us, like, hey, can we search the car? I'm like, I guess, you know, legally it's no different than alcohol, but talk about petty. I would never do that in a million years. I would never search a 19-year-old's car for his pack of Marlboros.
Right.
But I guess push comes to shove, legal. I guess it's legal.
Yeah.
So Kyle, we at this point, I think the answer is we don't see a problem with it. You know, I think Zach does bring up a good point. Seizing that alcohol container is one thing. Searching for more alcohol, it'd be nice if you had a reason why you thought more alcohol was in there, but I think we're good with it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep. You're welcome. All right. Who's next on deck? Is it Julian? Hey, buddy.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good, good. What state are you in?
New Jersey.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. It's miserable, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. I'm actually born in New Jersey, so I'm giving you a hard time. I was raised in Las Vegas. Yeah, I was born in Long Branch.
Oh, no. Okay, nice. Exit 105, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, something like that. I was a little young. I was pre-driving. I was only 5, so it was like 1 year before I started driving.
Okay, I'm about a 3-minute drive from the GWB, right on the Hudson River.
Nice, man. What you got, brother?
So, two-parter for you. First one is a pretty simple one that everybody seems to argue with me, and I just want a clarification on it. On a motor vehicle stop, let's just say bullshit Title 39 offense, you just stop the car, end up finding out a single occupant, driver has a warrant, and you arrest him right outside of his driver's door. Search incident to arrest. Inside the car, yes or no?
No. So, look, I'm going to let John take this one first, but I think he might need – John may have some follow-up questions on that, but John, who loves teaching in New Jersey. Actually, you've had some pretty big classes in New Jersey, John. But anyway, what you got?
Can you search it? So it depends, right? When you pull that dude out for the warrant, the vehicle, it is parked on the side of the road. You have two options under Arizona versus Gantt. You can leave him out of handcuffs and within reaching distance of the lunge or grab area of the vehicle and search it incident to arrest. I don't recommend you ever do that. That's asinine. Don't risk your life just so you can search the lunge or grab area with zero level of articulation. And in this case, you are arresting him for a warrant, so you don't have any reason to believe that there is evidence of the offense of arrest inside the vehicle. So only the first test under Gantt is going to apply with regard to search incident to arrest.
Okay. All right. And that's pretty much what I thought.
No, hold on. We're not done with you. Because this is Because this is a very common issue. But wasn't there a footnote in Gantt that actually said that cops should not do that? Do you remember that, Zach? Am I off?
Yeah, after on the first prong, they said if officers intentionally leave the arrestee unsecured, I'm paraphrasing, but contrary to normal police practices, that might itself be unreasonable, rendering the search unreasonable. Yeah,
it's like in Chimmel, like the search and dress where you move the guy around the house.
Yeah, right.
So you can like search his dresser drawer, right? So John brings up a good point there. But here's the thing, Julian. I gotta tell you, look, I'm not trying to give you, but like. My New Jersey cops, and I've taught in New Jersey for many years, and I'm a New Jersey barred attorney, they really like to play fast and loose with the rules. Would you agree with that to some degree? Like, they like to ride that line, you know?
It depends where. But
depends where, yeah. It depends where, yeah. So, and the reason I bring this up is because this is, like, a good example. Like, if the guy's out of the car, and he's going to be handcuffed, just like John said, safety comes first, right? And the car is going to be left there parked, and there's no probable cause for the vehicle, so we don't have a search on their wit. We're done, you know? But they want to call some kind of surgeon's arrest, which we could do prior to 2009. Actually, that's actually not true. New Jersey had its own version of Arizona versus Gantt before Gantt came out. It's just that, you know, I don't know. I just I don't want cops to make bad case law there, right? We already have, like, our problems there. We already have our courts kind of giving us a hard time, you know, and some things have been made easier with canine searches, and we now have somewhat of a motor vehicle exception in New Jersey now. I just don't want to ruin it, you know what I'm saying? So that's my only 2 cents I want to add there. But no, if they're out of the car and they're arrested, it's done.
So New Jersey's one that only one of a couple states I've never taught in, but isn't there state law that says they don't recognize the vehicle search incident to arrest?
That's correct. They actually had that before Gantt.
Yeah, they didn't recognize the Belton case. So that's second prong of Gantt, excuse me, would that apply in New Jersey?
I think it does. I think it does. I do teach that it does, because here's the deal. Whatever that case is.
I think it's Echol. Echol's the name of the case.
Yeah. I think they're referring to that protective sweep issue, you know, or just like searching as a matter of routine because they were, you know, it was in their lunge area. They weren't really talking about search-related evidence. In fact, I can say the opposite. Yeah. New Jersey, New Jersey is actually kind of weird. They actually had a case, maybe Echo, that said you can't do the Belton-type search, right? Hey, I arrest you from the car, I search your car.
Right.
But New Jersey has long held that if you have a reason to believe that evidence of DUI is in the car, you could search it. So they had that lower not probable cause level for DUI evidence. So they actually, in many ways, they've actually had Arizona versus Gantt for a long time.
Right. But that's only where you can, it has to be in areas where you can believe they could readily have alcohol accessible within the passenger compartment of the vehicle, correct?
Well, yeah, Gantt itself is limited to just the passenger compartment if you're looking for evidence of the crime of arrest. So yeah,
but I'm speaking about the DWI aspect that Anthony.
No, so hold on, let's get this straight. So let's say that I'm a drunk in a DUI driver in New Jersey, and I tell the cop, yeah, I was drinking alcohol right at the park, you know, and the cop says, all right, you know, he arrests me for DUI, but before he arrests me, he says, hey, where was the alcohol? You brought alcohol to the park? Yes, sir. Where is it? It's in the trunk. And my car is not going to be towed. Gantt does not allow me to search the trunk for the evidence?
No, but Carroll does in that case.
I think Gantt does. I don't read Gantt saying that it has to be somewhere. I read Gantt as reason to believe offense-related evidence is that the car, you can search the vehicle for that evidence.
They say passenger compartment in the holding.
I got to look at that again. John, is that how... that's how you read it too. That we can search the patch compartment for the evidence of the. And hold on. There's other cases after Gantt where they have searched trunks under
Gantt. If the trunk is accessible from inside the passenger compartment, there's case law that allows it.
Like an SUV, like a hatchback?
Yes.
Yeah, like an SUV or something.
Okay.
Well, look, I have never taught that. I can tell you that right now. I've always taught, and that seems reasonable to me, but I'm sorry. But if you have a reason to believe the evidence could be in the trunk of that crime, whether it's burglary tools or it's whatever it is, that I don't see why you can't open that trunk and get that evidence.
Me personally, if he admits to having the alcohol that he just confessed to consuming and he says it's in the trunk, I think me personally, I'm going to go in the trunk and get it.
Well, you're going to get it because at least you have PC. You have, right, PC. Zach?
Yeah, that's PC. That's Carol. Okay.
All right. I agree with that. I agree under those facts that even though alcohol in the trunk is not illegal in New Jersey, under these facts, it's evidence of the DUI.
Right.
John, what do you have a 2 cents on this before we end this conversation?
I don't. I know that in Scalia's concurrence and in Alito's dissent, they make reference to the second prong applying to the vehicle.
Yeah. I'm gonna research that again. I'm glad you brought this up, Zach, because I've never taught it that way. I've always said, just go where you think the evidence is, kind of like a Carroll type analogy. But I also think that's what sounds reasonable too.
So my reason for that is, and it's because Gant is premised on Belton and Chimel, and Belton's holding was that the passenger compartment is within the reach of the occupants. The first prong applies only to the passenger compartment. You can search the passenger compartment when the arrestee is unsecured and near the vehicle for weapons and evidence. And then, so it's because it's premised on Belton, because they didn't overrule Belton. They just clarified Belton.
Yeah.
Belton's holding is the passenger compartment and all the containers therein are within the reach of the arrestee.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not totally sold on that because I just don't think it makes sense to me that you have evidence that that's in the trunk and you just can't get it now. You have to use something else. But I think that's something that I'm going to have to clarify, and I will eat crow next time
we meet. And check out Thornton too, because Thornton's where Belton.
Well, that's where I was going to go.
Thornton where comes from.
Yeah, I think Thornton is a good place to start too.
Yeah.
Okay.
John's entertained by this. Go ahead, Julian.
I just had another quick one that I recently had a situation with, and it pertains to the webinar that we just had with canines. Basically, traffic stop. I build my RAS, reasonable articulable suspicion, to call for a canine. He denies consent. I call for a narcotics canine. The narcotics canine comes, does not hit on the car. Then I'm thinking of calling for a bomb dog, which is specialized in weapons for gunpowder.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, because I wasn't sure if I was able to continue to detain them if I was extending the stop too long. Even though I built my RAS, I just didn't know what they had in the car, but I was fairly confident there was something in the car based off of several factors.
What do you think, guys? John?
So you're identifying reasonable suspicion, right?
If I'm not mistaken, I wrote an entire report. I had about 12 reasonable articulable suspicions.
I do like that.
Yeah.
And so the question is, you know, you have reasonable suspicion to believe that there is some kind of general criminal activity going on here. I think there's a big difference between the factors that are going to support the idea that there's narcotics in a vehicle versus there's, you know, a reasonable suspicion to believe that there's
an illegal weapon, I guess.
Bomb in the car, right? Yeah.
Or a legal gun.
Okay. But I mean, I think the factors that go to narcotics could also support the idea of a weapon. But if we're...
The only reason why this came up as a thought to me was because after reviewing my MVR footage, when I asked the driver, are there any weapons in the car? I got a reaction, but I didn't notice the reaction in the heat of the moment. I noticed the reaction after I reviewed the entire stop. And that's when I was like, shit, I should have called for a bomb dog. I should have not called for a narcotics canine. But I called for the narcotics canine just based off of, like, that's just the first thing I always go for.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
You didn't have it at the time, right? So you run the dog. The dog doesn't alert. I think at that point, under Rodriguez, you need to get back to the mission of your traffic stop. If you start seeing more indications, like you say, you know, hey, are there any weapons in the vehicle? And the guy gives you those verbal fillers like, no.
Right. There shouldn't be. I love that one. There shouldn't be.
Yeah. Or they start target glancing, right? They're target glancing in the center console.
What I got. I got the target glancing and I got the what? Repeat that again. Like,
right.
Anthony, correct me if I'm wrong here, because we're talking New Jersey, right? We're talking New Jersey, and that definitely one of our outlier states.
Yep.
But if I'm seeing those things in the moment, I'm saying you've got RS to believe that the occupant is armed. Can you articulate dangerous? If you can.
Well, look, I think we have a problem with the gun in the car. I think that because New Jersey laws are the strictest in the nation, and by the way, they're mostly unconstitutional. And I don't know if Julian agrees with me or not, but you know, New Jersey has a ton of unconstitutional gun laws, but as an officer enforcing these laws, if we have a, if we have reasonable suspicion, there's a gun in the car and they're not owning up to it. In fact, this might work even in Nevada. It might work in Tennessee. If they, if we have, you know, a reasonable suspicion that there's a gun in the car and they have all these deceptive indicators that they're like, no, you know, cause a lawful person, like I, you know, I carry a gun in New Jersey cause I can, cause I have Leosa, you know what I mean? So, but I tell the officer, yeah, there's a gun in here. What's the beef? You know, it's right on my person, whatever. But if he has these indicators that there is a gun in the car, target glancing, and there shouldn't be a gun in the car, whatever, and it's New Jersey, that's going to be a felony. So, right? I mean, so I think that he may have reasonable suspicion under these facts.
I would agree. I would agree. And especially like you're talking about, we've got these draconian drug gun laws in that state.
Yeah.
This is going to be more of your application of like the Ninth Circuit's application where they say armed equals dangerous, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You got the protective sweep of the vehicle. You got the frisk of him. You got the protective sweep of the vehicle.
Actually, that's a good point too. John makes, he says, you know, why not just, if you have armed and dangerous and he's going to return to that vehicle, which, you know, at this point he's not under arrest, why don't you just do a protective sweep and not worry about the EOD dog?
I never even thought of that as a possibility.
That's actually kind of clever. That's actually probably the way to do it, because that would also be, yeah, I mean, it's credible too, right? It's like, hey, I have this reasonable suspicion that he has a gun in there, and you know, guns dangerous, right? So, you know, in New Jersey, yeah, just in, he, right now he's under arrest, he's not under arrest, just sweep it and hopefully you find the gun. But if you don't find the gun, maybe just call it a day and let him go.
All right.
Now that is a passion compartment search. I do know that. You're not looking the airbox, you're not looking the engine compartment on that one, or the trunk, generally speaking. But okay, that's good. I like that.
All right. Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
That's awesome. Zach, what do you got? I see you opening up the good book.
Lefebvre agrees.
Yeah, what verse?
Lefebvre agrees that it's just the passenger compartment.
What is it? Tell me, because
it's premised on Belton.
Sean put the quote in here, and it says in the vehicle. So what does Lefebvre say exactly? Is it like a quick quote that can?
This is to the argument that the trunk should be considered. He says, while the point is well taken, it is doubted that such an extension would or should be recognized. The Gantt evidence search for evidence rule is likely to be construed to permit the kind of search allowed by Belton only, which is a passenger compartment search.
Well, I got to tell you, in Vegas, man, we did not just search a passenger compartment under Belton. We, you know, we were tossing the whole damn car, you know,
including. So I also have this case from South Carolina called Robinson, and they upheld the search of the trunk, but they said we're going to consider it a part of the passenger compartment because it is accessible from inside the passenger compartment. Like, okay. I think in this case, the seat folded down.
Yeah, yeah, or maybe like a pass-through, like a Honda Accord.
Yeah, so therefore they're presuming passenger compartment is the limitation without articulation of access. And I, like I said, I just think because we're premised on Belton in the first place, that just makes sense. Right, we're also searching on a lower standard than probable cause.
I'm going to call Alito tomorrow. I'm going to call Thomas. I don't think Wayne Lefebvre got this right, but you know. No, but look, that kind of helps. I wish it wasn't right, because it just doesn't feel right to me. But I also, what's the Sanders case, John?
We're asking about protective sweeps in vehicles.
Well, why not just put Michigan versus Long in there?
It's coming right now, man. It's coming right now. All right.
Let's go Andrew next. All right. Good stuff, Zach. Thank you. Oh, this is we have, I think this other guy was calling. Is this Andrew calling me? Hold on. Hello, this is Anthony. Hey, Andrew, hold on one second. Yeah, I guess Andrew without the mic. I forgot. Hey, Andrew.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. Are you? So it says South Carolina. Is that where you're from?
Yeah.
Okay. What you got?
So mine is less of a feature of a person and actually nothing to do with a traffic stop. But it is a seizure. So the incident was basically a fight in progress with guns. We go out there, it's at a club. like 30, 40 people in the parking lot trying to figure out what's going on. Everybody's filming, no problem with that. One of the drunks comes up with her phone filming, but she's got the flashlight on her phone. She keeps putting it within probably 5-6 inches of one of the deputy's faces. Can you not temporarily seize that phone due to officer safety issue with her putting the light in the deputy's face? You know, basically blinding him at that point so he can't see past the phone. Is that legal or is it still...
Like First Amendment. So your obstruction statute, do you know what your obstruction statute says?
We have more of a hindering statute, but yeah, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah. So I we don't know exactly, you know, your hindering statute, but I have some good, I guess, some good advice on this that I think generally the courts agree with. So Zach, you want to kick this off?
Yeah, I think the obvious would be, I'm assuming we've told her numerous times to knock it off, right?
Yeah, we got at least three times. Yep. At least three times on camera, body camera, where we told her we don't care if she films.
Yep.
But she can't put the light directly in the officer's
yep.
face.
Yep.
I'm imagining in most states, obstruction hindering statutes, this would qualify. It's a physical act. It's definitely interfering with your investigation. So probably the easiest route is just arrest her. But your question was, can we take her phone? And I think, yes, I think this would be under these circumstances, I think it would be a reasonable thing to do, for safety and investigative purposes after multiple warnings, to take the phone, not to search it, not to prevent her from recording, but to prevent her from shining the light in your face as she insists upon doing.
Yeah, there was no search of the phone or anything like that. Yeah. The phone was just taken, after about three, 4 minutes, we get the phone back. But the question is basically just, is the seizure of that phone even temporarily lawful under
I think it is.
Officer safety?
Just out of curiosity, did you turn off the recording? Probably not, right?
I didn't go into the phone to do anything, so I don't know if the recording was still there or not.
I would like it. First of all, I'm totally with Zach on this one. I think this is, you know, this is absolutely within the rights of the police officer to do, you know, their business, right? It's white light at night. It messes up night vision. It's not. It's also physical obstruction. You physically got this person in your face. They have a right of gathering information, but they don't have a right to be in your face like this. But I just wouldn't turn off the phone. They'll just put it down on maybe inside the passenger seat or something in the car, just to show the court that it's not that they're recording. I don't care about that. It's the white light in front of my face.
Yeah, there were probably, I'd say, 6 to 7 other people that were recording. A couple of them had lights on their phones, but they were off at a distance, you know, several feet away. Not an issue. We didn't have any issues with that. It was the one person that was putting it in the officer's face.
Yeah, absolutely. That's not legal, light. Man. I mean, sure, that's not legal in a non-officer's face. Don't put the light in my face either. You know, if I'm at, you know, a concert or something, don't put your white light in front of my face. I mean, you know, I'm trying to enjoy the concert, you know, the tribute band. What do you think, John? Do you have any problem with this?
I have no problem with it. I'd go assault on a law enforcement officer.
Okay, you're from Arizona. You don't, I do. Let me tell you something, Andrew. Whenever you ask a cop from Arizona what to do, it's a thumping's going to be involved. I mean, they don't play in Arizona. Okay, he's going to get him for the guy's going to prison for what he did to that cop, and it's probably some truth to that.
Is he putting the officer in reasonable apprehension of imminent unlawful contact or unwanted contact?
Come on, John. Are we saying that now this is an assault? That yeah, but you're going to bonk me on the head with this damn thing. Is it really reasonable? I don't know. Can we?
Hey, we got a straight up Donnybrook going on here. I'm separating these people. This dude's over here bleeding, and this chick's just up in your business. Like, I'm 5 inches away from your face.
But they're recording. I don't think you're going to be thumped on the head with the phone. I don't know. But you know what? You know, you were a SWAT operator, and you know, full kitted out. You know what I mean? You're going to hit the Kevlar helmet with the. I know you don't arrive on scene without the Kevlar. So, Andrew. Don't listen to John. Okay. Don't hit him. Please do not arrest these people for assault or, you know, attempted assault on a PO, you know, and send them to the penitentiary. Just take the phone or what Zach says, you know, if they don't stop, maybe arrest them, but okay.
I appreciate it, guys.
You're welcome. I tell you, you keep acting like this, John. I'm not going to invite you back. I mean, you're scaring me over here. You're like, you're a little aggressive, aren't you? On the first amendment auditor, you're going to get him for a battery and a PO.
Crime. That sounds like it meets the elements of the crime to me.
God, yeah. Where is John from? He's from Malibu, Pepperdine Law School. You don't do that to a Pepperdine grad, okay? You don't get in my face, okay? While I'm eating my Grey Poupon sandwich. I mean, this guy, just ridiculous. All right. So, yeah. I mean, you know, anyway, I think it's pretty funny. Yeah, Richard says a hanging offense. God, John, calm down, man. Okay, we have time for one more question. One more live question. We have a question? If not, I may have a couple of questions. Okay, Jordan, let's answer your question. Oh, call. Okay, I got you. You got my phone number?
Did Amanda have a question, Rick?
Here, look. Oh, I thought it was Arizona. It's Alabama. Hold on. Hey, buddy.
Hey, this is Jordan.
Hey, buddy.
My question was, I kind of missed out on a slot, I think. The Cornejo?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one, I kind of got confused because a few slots down, it talked about allowing a canine officer to let another officer take over his stop as long as there was no chit-chat or unnecessary delay. But I thought the Cornejo one said that you couldn't do that. So I was just going to try to get that clear.
If I'm not mistaken, that's the case where the officer took over the stop and then the one that took it over held onto the citation after it was all done for 2 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, obviously that's prohibited, right? I mean, now we're adding time, you know?
Right, okay. Yeah, I stepped out of the room to get my DoorDash, so I missed out on that. I just wanted to clear that up. And then the guy was talking about y'all were talking about the protective suite for the gun based on reasonable, was that based on reasonable suspicion?
Reasonable suspicion for armed and dangerous, right? Reasonable suspicion that they're the person, yeah, that there could be a weapon in that vehicle. Now, I will tell you that, look, I would like I want some specific facts personally that there could be a gun in that car or something dangerous. You know, I don't like generalized stuff with these vehicle searches, protective sweeps, but that's what the case is. You know, it's that if they return to the car, they can become armed and dangerous.
Okay. What if they're still sitting in the car?
Well, then you get them out and you pat them down because you
still applies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just get them out. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And those case laws were Michigan v. Long and U.S. v. Sanders.
Yep. Sanders was the other one that John put in there. Okay. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. That answered both my questions. Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome. Okay. So Jordan is good. Okay. Look, let's answer a few more questions if you guys don't mind. Hopefully let's try to make these quick. These are some questions that came in, you know, from the emails. Real quick. Did you see, I see Baton Rouge had a, they got found liable for an unconstitutional policy for strip searches. Did you see that they were allowing field strip searches in the field with reasonable suspicion? Come on, Baton Rouge. I mean, I just brought it up because it's like such an obvious violation. You know, so anyway.
Yeah,
they said that the court is unpersuaded anything less than probable cause is sufficient to justify a strip search of a non-arrestee. It said the policy's been around for 30 years. Nobody in 30 years. I mean, I don't know. Have we taught in Baton Rouge? Maybe we should have caught this a little earlier. Maybe we should help these guys. Like, what are you guys doing in Baton Rouge? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Rick, well, maybe we shouldn't check and see if anybody's ever taught there, Rick.
Yeah, maybe we're going to be dragged in it. You know? Maybe probably John Ween is taught there because, you know, he probably would have taught that, like, then arrest him for battery or something. All right. This quick question is from a cop in Mountain Home, Idaho. And he says, like, basically, I'm just in a nutshell, they have a house fire, right? And they have these people that are going to their house, like, next door. And then their house is not on fire yet. But they want to, like, recover their personal property, make sure they get out their computer, I guess, and their keys or whatever. And the cops want to know, generally under the Fourth Amendment, we can't answer under state law, of course, but under the Fourth Amendment, can they restrict these people from going into their home?
So the neighbor's house is on fire.
Yep.
And I guess it's close enough that
the cops are concerned
that
that house can catch on fire.
Yeah. I mean, I guess under the exigent circumstances exception, I mean, as long as the officer can articulate why he thinks it's reasonable that this house could easily catch fire. I mean, unless it's like starting to singe right now, why would you not let them go in there? Yeah.
Yeah. Especially like, you know, for animals, right? I mean, if you did not let these people get their animals out, that's cold blood. And unless the house, just like you said, like you can be like, no, it's imminent. Like this thing is going down. I'm sorry. You lost your animals, but that's not what they're describing here.
Yeah.
They're just talking about people that just kind of want to, you know, they're in the fire scene. You know what I'm saying, Zach? They're like next door, you know, the house. Anyway, you can probably picture what's going on here.
Can we make a community caretaking argument? Because they're not
keeping them out
in the house, right? I mean, going there, and I'm like,
I'm
going to save you from yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, I think the answer is yes, but it should be objective facts that if we go in there, they can, you know, maybe they don't know certain things. Maybe the wind is shifting, and there's going to be smoke inhalation, and you know, maybe the fire people, you know, the firefighters are like, no, you can't let them in there because, you know. That house it can catch on fire within minutes. I don't freaking know. So these are tough. I guess one point is that these are tough decisions for cops to make, and just do your best. You know, if you think it's a danger for the person, you're allowed to keep, you are permitted to keep people protected from themselves or others. Right.
And I think a firefighter is telling you that that's too dangerous. Then that's
good enough for government work.
That helps. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
I agree. Just use good judgment though, right? I mean, I have seen some situations, not necessarily with fires, but just like nobody can go in the cul-de-sac, you know? And it's like, you know, there's like something kind of stupid going on. Like one house is, you know, I'm not saying like gunfire and stuff like that. I'm just saying some stuff seems a little excessive.
I agree that if we don't stop them, we are not going to be exposing ourselves to liability.
No, we're not. Absolutely not.
No affirmative constitutional duty to protect the individual.
That's right. We have no duty to protect them. I mean, we didn't put them in that position.
Right. No special relationship, no state-created danger.
Nope, we didn't start the fire. We didn't start the fire.
There you go, Billy Joel.
Yeah, Billy Joel, exactly. All right. Next one is from a cop who says... well, look, this one is about, we've talked about this before. This is a cop from Nevada, and he's talking about like in Nevada, we can't really arrest people for shoplifting, for petty larceny, unless there's something else going on. Like they're not identifying themselves or the crime will continue. Like they're like, yep, right when I leave this one, I'm going to Walmart and steal more stuff there too. And so you got to kind of let them go. But what if they have that shoplifting evidence in their backpack? Can we do a limited search for that shoplifting evidence before we kick them loose with their citation?
Yes.
Why?
Different justifications. You're saying they're in Nevada?
Yeah, they're in Nevada, yeah.
Well, I know there's the Iowa case law that says you can do, you know, a limited search of the person as long as it's under arrest-like circumstances and they know what's happening and it's a limited intrusion.
Limited, yeah.
But there's some California case law that deals with the same thing. There's some Colorado case law that deals with the same thing that says if you have a statute that says this is not an arrestable offense, well, then that takes away a very valuable tool for law enforcement. And so in those circumstances where your statute actually dictates you will not take this person into custody, it allows such a limited search. And then ultimately you can make the exigency argument if you have nothing, you know, from lower court that supports you based on where you are, that if they are released, they will go and destroy that evidence. And
I disagree. I just think that the way you handle it, don't search them, cite them for the offense and just tell the prosecutor, hey, by the way, when you bring them to court, give them a subpoena deuces tookum, right? To bring in that stolen merchandise. Isn't that the way we handle this? The reason I bring that up is because I saw a case or some kind of journal article about that. Like you're never going to see that stolen sweater again. Like you give them a deuces tookum, like they're never like, which is being, they're being funny, right? Like just give them a deuces tookum, which is for those people who are watching. That is a subpoena that tells a witness, I guess a defendant, to bring in, you can do it for defendants, to bring in certain things with them, right? Unless they incriminate themselves. But the thing is, like, it's kind of funny because obviously you're never going to see that stolen merchandise again. So, yes, you grab it and go, but it is a limited search. You agree, Zach?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
The Ninth Circuit.
I can elaborate, but you want to keep these brief. So, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Let's keep them brief. So, but one thing, the cop did ask for a citation out of the Ninth Circuit. There is a case called U.S. versus Snipe, S-I-S-N-I-P-E, which talks about recovering marijuana when California was a cite and release state for marijuana, and the court upheld the grabbing the marijuana and kicking the guy loose. So I don't know why shoplifting is any different. All right, a New Jersey case from Passaic. Searching a vehicle after the driver flees from a fleeing or crashed vehicle, right? If you pursue a vehicle and the driver flees and crashes, would that be considered abandoned? And now the vehicle can be searched.
Yes. I mean, it's abandoned in the Fourth Amendment sense of the word. That's the, to me, that's the quintessential example of abandonment. Yeah. So it's not a search in the constitutional sense of the word to search through the car. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's basically relinquished his standing.
Interest. Right. You agree, John, running away from the car and saying, not mine, you know, I'm getting out of here. Would that be an objective reason to believe that the person should not expect any privacy interest in the car?
That is absolutely purposeful abandonment.
Yep. And New Jersey does recognize purposeful abandonment. Absolutely. That's one thing New Jersey is good on. In fact, they just had I know we're trying to keep these short, but real quick, they just had a New Jersey Supreme Court case. It may have been from the appellate division, but anyway, where a guy was detained at Union Station. He had a backpack with him. The cop told him he had a warrant for his arrest. He flees. He leaves the backpack where it was, and the cop searched and found a gun, and they said, abandoned, right? He would love for cops not to search his bag, but he shouldn't expect it. Okay. This is actually another New Jersey. So this is a question is, can you arrest somebody for obstruction when somebody refuses to identify themselves and they are subject to summons? I can answer this because I actually did research this with Tom Shea, one of our New Jersey instructors. New Jersey does not have a stop and identify statute, but it does have case law that basically hindering law enforcement process or whatever it is. I should be better on this, but it's like, you basically are, if you need that ID, if you need it for your investigation and they don't provide it, it's basically hindering a police officer, and that can be a citation or an arrest under New Jersey law. So when the cop says, if they don't provide their ID for a summons, that is quintessential hindering a police officer. They cannot do their job without your ID. So you have no option but to arrest them, because otherwise, everybody gets out of summonses in New Jersey, but not identifying themselves. The last question is from Fort Worth, Texas. So this is actually a pretty good one, guys. So I'm on a tactical team tasked with completing high-risk operations. So he's kind of like, you know, a John Wayne. And we often deploy barricaded suspects. We utilize surround and call-out tactics. The most common resolution is the subject surrenders outside the residence. Now, the arrest usually doesn't take place inside the residence. They're calling out the person to them. Can we conduct a buoy search, protect the sweep, right? If the house is going to be either, he says three things. Like, you know, usually we do it with consent. We try to get back into the house with consent. Maybe like a witness is there or a co-occupant. We try to get into the house and do a protective sweep with consent. So far, so good. Or we want to sweep it to secure it for a continuing investigation, or we want to enter it to secure it for a warrant. Okay, let's talk about the first thing, okay? We got the guy in custody. We have we don't have anybody outside the house that can give us consent. Can we go into the house as a matter of routine to sweep it for because we're going to get a warrant, yes or no? John?
No, as a matter of routine, absolutely not.
Okay, you're going to need what to get into that house? If you want to lock it down for a warrant.
You want to lock it down? Well, you're going to need to have at least reasonable suspicion to believe that there is evidence of a crime inside while you're conducting your investigation. And then if you're freezing it in anticipation of a warrant, you're going to need to get that PC.
Okay. You'll get a warrant. Okay. So you have the PC, but you have to have a reason to believe that somebody could destroy evidence, be a danger to the cops and so forth.
Well, are we talking about going, through the house? Or what are we talking about?
No, I'm sorry. I just want to, the cop just wants to go into the house and sweep it for people before he gets this warrant.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, if you, what you're going to need to do is if you're trying to lock that house down, right? Mm-hmm. Entry and exclude is highly scrutinized. So you're going to need to be able to articulate that there is PC inside the home. You know, some courts refer to it as clear PC, right? So they get a higher standard even than regular PC. Mm-hmm. You're going to need to balance the level of intrusion against the individual's privacy rights. The privacy right is obviously going to be huge because it's the home, the place that has the highest level of Fourth Amendment protection. You've got to diligently pursue that search warrant. So don't be, you know, sitting there and eating your pizza and dilly-dallying. And then if you, you know, truly, you're going to need to articulate dangerous Confederates, or you're going to need to articulate a reason to believe that evidence will be destroyed if you don't make that choice.
Okay. Anything to add, Zach?
No, you can do a protective sweep, even though the arrest occurs outside, if you've got RS to believe there's a dangerous person inside.
Yeah. I think that law is very clear, right? I mean, obviously, you know, and actually that's transition. So I like what, you know, John said, he talked about these factors to articulate if you're going to get the warrant. But what if, Zach, we are just continuing our investigation, right? We're not done with our investigation. We have this person outside. Let's, you know, this happens all the time. Let's say it's some kind of shots fired call, right? So we do a surrounding call out and we have the people, we have the suspect come out, who the person we think is firing a gun in the air, right? Mm-hmm. When can we go into that house to do a sweep now? So this is not that warrant situation. Diligently pursue PC issue. This is like, hey, look, I'm just doing my investigation issue. When can I go in that house and do a protective sweep to make sure there's nobody in there that's going to take shots at us?
Have we arrested this guy that?
No.
Yeah, he's just being detained?
Yeah.
So first of all, that's a problem. First of all, calling him out, there's.
You caught that. Yeah.
Without probable cause. So.
Yeah.
But you know. All right, let's get over that hurdle.
Let's get him probable cause, or, you know, let's get him probable cause. There's celebratory firing in the backyard, and we have probable cause that the person in there did it. So we don't want to go up to, for whatever reason, go up to the door and knock on the door. So they come out, we have our suspect, we want to go into the house and sweep it.
With reasonable suspicion that there's somebody inside, yes, but not without somebody else inside.
Okay.
Not without, yeah.
So I think if you're looking at it from the viewer's point of view, they may be like, whoa, probable cause, reasonable suspicion, right? So would you agree with this? Reasonable suspicion generally does not allow you to do a surrounding call out, right? Because
correct,
they're in their home and reasonable suspicion doesn't, you know, whatever, allow that. But then, you know, probable cause is where we're at. So we have probable cause. We can actually call people out. Probable cause plus what? Exigency.
Exigency, yes.
So it's not just probable cause. This is the, you know, surprise Arizona Police Department, right? Come out, your hands up. Okay. Then they come out. And then you see somebody peeking through the window. This is a shots fired call. Somebody's shooting in the air and so forth. You see somebody peeking in the window, looking at law enforcement. And plus the shots fired, all the kind of stuff. Do you think that is reasonable suspicion to clear it and get that person, you know, detained temporarily while we figure things out?
Absolutely. That's absolutely.
John?
That's textbook Robbern versus Huff right there, right? So Robbern versus Huff, 2012 case. And what that said, United States Supreme Court is if you have an objectively reasonable basis for fearing that violence is imminent, which based on the facts as you're describing them, I would say you do, you can make an entry into that home and to secure it. And this idea of officer safety, but we're not just calling it officer safety. We're articulating all the reasons why we have an objectively reasonable basis to believe that that the threat of violence is imminent. You know, we're talking Texas, right, Anthony? And this is a question that somebody submitted to us.
Was this from Texas? Yeah, I said Fort Worth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Rios versus State is 625 S period W period 3rd 488 Texas App 2020. Great case on point here, right? We're talking about, we're making that arrest on the front porch of a house. and the officers can articulate, yep, dangerous Confederates inside the structure. They do a protective sweep throughout the structure, and the officers do a fantastic, absolutely fantastic job of articulating all the factors that support them doing that.
Awesome. Awesome. Guys, I think we really did a lot of, you know, this was a great show. I hope you guys agree. I think we answered a lot of questions. Zach, before we go, do you have anything to add?
No, I think we covered some good ground tonight. Appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. John?
Thank you guys all for being here. It's actually absolutely an honor. I appreciate you guys taking time in your evening to sit in here with us and walk through some of these. And if you guys are interested in having us out to your agency, please do it, right? We'd love to come. If you want to host, get us out there. This is valuable information, and it'll save you a lot of money in liability, reduce liability, and keep your officers safe.
Yep. So you heard John. If you guys are interested in bringing out Zach or John both at the same time to conduct search and seizure training, agency-wide training, host training, whatever you guys need, they also have on-demand training, email training@bluetogold.com. I repeat, if you want anything from these guys, training@bluetogold.com. And we hope to help you get it right every single time. Until next time, my friends, stay safe.